The hobbits grew very weary. They advanced slowly, for they had to pick their way through a pathless country, encumbered by fallen trees and tumbled rocks. As long as they could, they avoided climbing for Frodo's sake, and because it was in fact difficult to find any way up out of the narrow dales. They had been 2 days in this country when the weather turned wet. The wind began to blow steadily out of the west, and pour the water of the distant seas on the dark heads of the hills in fine drenching rain. By nightfall they were all soaked, and their camp was cheerless, for they could not get any fire to burn. The next day the hills rose still higher and steeper before them, and they were forced to turn away northwards out of their course. Strider seemed to be getting anxious. They were nearly 10 days out from Weathertop, and their stock of provisions was beginning to run low. It went on raining. That night they camped on a stony shelf, with a rock wall behind them, in which there was a shallow cave, a mere scoop in the cliff. Frodo was restless. The cold and wet had made his wound more painful than ever, and the ache and sense of deadly chill took away all sleep. He lay tossing and turning and listening fearfully to the stealthy night noises. Wind in chinks of rock, water dripping, a crack, the sudden rattling fall of a loosened stone. He felt that black shapes were advancing to smother him, but when he sat up he saw nothing but the back of Strider, sitting hunched up, smoking his pipe and watching. He lay down again and passed into an uneasy dream, in which he walked on the grass in his garden in the Shire, but it seemed faint and dim, less clear than the tall black shadows that stood looking over the hedge. In the morning he woke to find that the rain had stopped. The clouds were still thick, but they were breaking, and pale strips of blue appeared between them. The wind was shifting again. They didn't start early. Immediately after their cold and comfortless breakfast, Strider went off alone, telling the others to remain under the shelter of the cliff until he came back. He was going to climb up, if he could, and get a look at the lie of the land. When he returned, he wasn't reassuring. "We've come too far to the north," he said, "and we must find some way to turn back southwards again. If we keep on as we are going, we shall get up into the Ettendales far north of Rivendell. That is troll country, and little known to me. We could perhaps find our way through and come round to Rivendell from the north, but it would take too long, for I don't know the way, and our food would not last. So somehow or other we must find the ford of Bruinen." The rest of that day they spent scrambling over rocky ground. They found a passage between two hills that led them into a valley running southeast, the direction that they wished to take. But towards the end of the day they found their road again barred by a ridge of high land. Its dark edge against the sky was broken into many bare points, like teeth of a blunted saw. They had a choice between going back or climbing over it. They decided to attempt the climb, but it proved very difficult. Before long Frodo was obliged to dismount and struggle along on foot. Even so, they often despaired of getting their pony up, or indeed of finding a path for themselves, burdened as they were. The light was nearly gone, and they were all exhausted when at last they reached the top. They had climbed onto a narrow saddle between two higher points, and the land fell steeply away again, only a short distance ahead. Frodo threw himself down and lay on the ground shivering. His left arm was lifeless, and his side and shoulder felt as if icy claws were laid upon them. The trees and rocks about him seemed shadowy and dim.
"We can't go any further," said Merry to Strider. "I'm afraid this has been too much for Frodo. I'm dreadfully anxious about him. What are we to do? Do you think they'll be able to cure him in Rivendell if we ever get there?"
"We shall see," answered Strider. "There is nothing more that I can do in the wilderness, and it's chiefly because of his wound that I'm so anxious to press on. But I agree that we can go no further tonight."
"What's the matter with my master?"
asked Sam in a low voice, looking appealingly at Strider.
His wound was small, and it's already closed. There's nothing to be seen but a cold white mark on his shoulder."
"Frodo has been touched by the weapons of the enemy," said Strider, "and there is some poison or evil at work that's beyond my skill to drive out. But don't give up hope, Sam." Night was cold up on the high ridge. They lit a small fire down under the gnarled roots of an old pine that hung over a shallow pit. It looked as if stone had once been quarried there. They sat huddled together. The wind blew chill through the pass, and they heard the treetops lower down moaning and sighing. Frodo lay half in a dream, imagining that endless dark wings were sweeping by above him, and that on the wings rode pursuers that sought him in all the hollows of the hills. The morning dawned bright and fair. The air was clean, and the light pale and clear in a rain-washed sky. Their hearts were encouraged, but they longed for the sun to warm their cold, stiff limbs. As soon as it was light, Strider took Merry with him, and went to survey the country from the height to the east of the pass. The sun had risen, and was shining brightly when he returned with more comforting news. They were now going more or less in the right direction. If they went on, down the further side of the ridge, they would have the mountains on the left. Some way ahead, Strider had caught a glimpse of the Loudwater again, and he knew that, though it was hidden from view, the road to the ford was not far from the river, and lay on the side nearest to them.
"We must make for the road again," he said. "We can't hope to find a path through these hills. Whatever danger may beset it, the road is our only way to the ford."
As soon as they had eaten, they set out again. They climbed slowly down the southern side of the ridge, but the way was much easier than they had expected, for the slope was far less steep on this side, and before long Frodo was able to ride again. Bill Ferney's poor old pony was developing an unexpected talent for picking out a path, and for sparing its rider as many jolts as possible. The spirits of the party rose again. Even Frodo felt better in the morning light, but every now and again a mist seemed to obscure his sight, and he passed his hands over his eyes. Pippin was a little ahead of the others. Suddenly he turned round and called to them.
"There's a path here," he cried.
When they came up with him, they saw that he had made no mistake. There were clearly the beginnings of a path that climbed with many windings out of the woods below and faded away on the hilltop behind. In places it was now faint and overgrown, or choked with fallen stones and trees, but at one time it seemed to have been much used. It was a path made by strong arms and heavy feet. Here and there old trees had been cut or broken down, and large rocks cloven or heaved aside to make a way. They followed the track for some while, for it offered much the easiest way down, but they went cautiously, and their anxiety increased as they came into the dark woods, and the path grew plainer and broader. Suddenly, coming out of a belt of fir trees, it ran steeply down a slope, and turned sharply to the left round the corner of a rocky shoulder of the hill. When they came to the corner, they looked round and saw that the path ran on over a level strip under the face of a low cliff overhung with trees. In the stony wall there was a door hanging crookedly ajar upon one great hinge. Outside the door they all halted. There was a cave or rock chamber behind, but in the gloom inside nothing could be seen. Strider, Sam, and Merry, pushing with all their strength, managed to open the door a little wider, and then Strider and Merry went in. They didn't go far, for on the floor lay many old bones, and nothing else was to be seen near the entrance except some great empty jars and broken pots.
"Surely this is a troll hole, if ever there was one," said Pippin. "Come out, you two, and let us get away. Now we know who made the path, and we'd better get off it quick."
"There's no need, I think," said Strider, coming out. "It's certainly a troll hole, but it seems to have been long forsaken. I don't think we need be afraid. But let's go on down warily, and we shall see."
The path went on again from the door, and turning to the right again across the level space, plunged down a thick wooded slope. Pippin, not liking to show Strider that he was still afraid, went on ahead with Merry. Sam and Strider came behind, one on each side of Frodo's pony, for the path was now broad enough for four or five hobbits to walk abreast. But they'd not gone very far before Pippin came running back, followed by Merry. They both looked terrified.
"There are trolls," Pippin panted. "Down in a clearing in the woods not far below. We got a sight of them through the tree trunks. They're very large."
"We'll come and look at them," said Strider, picking up a stick. Frodo said nothing, but Sam looked scared. The sun was now high, and it shone down through the half-stripped branches of the trees and lit the clearing with bright patches of light. They halted suddenly on the edge and peered through the tree trunks, holding their breath. There stood the trolls, three large trolls. One was stooping, and the other two stood staring at him. Strider walked forward unconcernedly.
"Get up, old stone," he said,
and broke his stick upon the stooping troll. Nothing happened. There was a gasp of astonishment from the hobbits, and then even Frodo laughed.
"Well," he said, "we're forgetting our family history. These must be the very three that were caught by Gandalf, quarrelling over the right way to cook 13 dwarves and one hobbit." "I had no idea we were anywhere near the place," said Pippin.
He knew the story well. Bilbo and Frodo had told it often. But as a matter of fact, he'd never more than half believed it. Even now he looked at the stone trolls with suspicion, wondering if some magic might not suddenly bring them to life again.
"You are forgetting not only your family history, but all you ever knew about trolls," said Strider. "It's broad daylight with a bright sun, and yet you come back trying to scare me with a tale of live trolls waiting for us in this glade. In any case, you might have noticed that one of them has an old bird's nest behind his ear. That would be a most unusual ornament for a live troll."
They all laughed. Frodo felt his spirits reviving. The reminder of Bilbo's first successful adventure was heartening. The sun, too, was warm and comforting, and the mist before his eyes seemed to be lifting a little. They rested for some time in the glade, and took their midday meal right under the shadow of the troll's large legs.
"Won't somebody give us a bit of a song while the sun is high?" said Merry, when they'd finished. "We haven't had a song or a tale for days."
"Not since Weathertop," said Frodo. The others looked at him.
"Don't worry about me," he added. "I feel much better, but I don't think I could sing. Perhaps Sam could dig something out of his memory."
"Come on, Sam," said Merry. "There's more stored in your head than you let on about."
"I don't know about that," said Sam.
"But how would this suit? It ain't what I call proper poetry, if you understand me. Just a bit of nonsense. But these old images here brought it to my mind."
Standing up, with his hands behind his back, as if he was at school, he began to sing to an old tune.
"Troll sat alone on his seat of stone, and munched and mumbled bare old bone. For many a year he had gnawed it near, for meat was hard to come by. Done by, gum by, in a cave in the hills he dwelt alone, and meat was hard to come by. Up came Tom with his big boots on, said he to Troll, 'Pray, what is yon? For it looks like the shin of mine uncle Tim, as should be a lion in graveyard, caveyard, paveyard. This many a year has Tim been gone, and I thought he was lying in graveyard. My lad,' says Troll, 'this bone I stole, but what be bones that lie in a hole? Thine uncle was dead as a lump of lead, afore I found his shin bone. Tin bone,
thin bone. He can spare a share for a poor old trawl, for he don't need his shin bone. Said Tom, I don't see why the likes of thee, with that axe and leave, should go making free with the shank or the shin of my father's kin. So hand the old bone over, Rover, Trover, though dead he be, it belongs to he. So hand the old bone over. For a couple of pins, says Troll, and grins, I'll eat thee too, and gnaw thy shins. A bit of fresh meat will go down sweet. I'll try my teeth on thee now. See now, see now. I'm tired of gnawing old bones and skins. I've a mind to dine on thee now. But just as he thought his dinner was caught, he found his hands had hold of naught, for before he could mind, Tom slipped behind, and gave him the boot to learn him, warn him, darn him. A bump of the boot on the seat, Tom thought, would be the way to learn him. But harder than stone is the flesh and bone of a troll that sits in the hills alone. As well set your boot to the mountain's root, for the seat of a troll don't feel it. Peel it, heel it. Old Troll laughed when he heard Tom groan, and he knew his toes could feel it. Tom's leg is game since home he came, and his bootless foot is lasting lame. But Troll don't care, and he's still there, with the bone he boned from its owner. Donor, boner, Troll's old seat is still the same, and the bone he boned from its owner.
Well, that's a warning to us all, laughed Mary. It's as well you used a stick and not your hand, Strider.
Where did you come by that, Sam? Asked Pippin. I've never heard those words before.
Sam muttered something inaudible. It's out of his own head, of course, said Frodo. I'm learning a lot about Sam Gamgee on this journey. First he was a conspirator, now he's a jester. He'll end up by becoming a wizard, or a warrior.
I hope not, said Sam. I don't want to be neither.
In the afternoon they went on down the woods. They were probably following the very track that Gandalf, Bilbo, and the dwarves had used many years before. After a few miles they came out on the top of a high bank above the road. At this point the road had left the Horwell far behind in its narrow valley, and now clung close to the feet of the hills, rolling and winding eastward among the woods and heather-covered slopes towards the fords and the mountains. Not far down the bank, Strider pointed out a stone in the grass. On it, roughly cut and now much weathered, could still be seen dwarf runes and secret marks.
"There," said Mary. "That must be the stone that marked the place where the troll's gold was hidden. How much is left of Bilbo's share, I wonder, Frodo?"
Frodo looked at the stone and wished that Bilbo had brought home no treasure more perilous nor less easy to part with.
"None at all," he said.
"Bilbo gave it all away. He told me he didn't feel it was really his, as it came from robbers." The road lay quiet under the long shadows of early evening. There was no sign of any other travellers to be seen. As there was now no other possible course for them to take, they climbed down the bank and, turning left, went off as fast as they could. Soon a shoulder of the hills cut off the light of the fast westering sun. A cold wind flowed down to meet them from the mountains ahead. They were beginning to look out for a place off the road where they could camp for the night, when they heard a sound that brought sudden fear back into their hearts, the noise of hoofs behind them. They looked back, but they couldn't see far because of the many windings and rollings of the road. As quickly as they could, they scramble off the beaten way and up into the deep heather and bilberry brushwood on the slopes above until they came to a small patch of thick-growing hazels. As they peered out from among the bushes, they could see the road, faint and grey in the failing light, some 30 feet below them. The sound of hoofs grew nearer. They were going fast, with a light clippity-clippity-clip. Then faintly, as if it was blown away from them by the breeze, they seemed to catch a dim ringing, as of small bells tinkling.
"That doesn't sound like a Black Rider's horse," said Frodo, listening intently.
The other hobbits agreed hopefully that it did not, but they all remained full of suspicion. They'd been in fear of pursuit for so long that any sound from behind seemed ominous and unfriendly. But Strider was now leaning forward, stooped to the ground, with a hand to his ear and a look of joy on his face. The light faded, and the leaves on the bushes rustled softly. Clearer and nearer now the bells jingled, and clippity-clip came the quick trotting feet. Suddenly into view below came a white horse, gleaming in the shadows, running swiftly. In the dusk its headstall flickered and flashed, as if it were studded with gems like living stars. The rider's cloak streamed behind him, and his hood was thrown back. His golden hair flowed, shimmering in the wind of his speed. To Frodo it appeared that a white light was shining through the form and raiment of the rider,